So in the next verse, we'll talk about what is that state that we need to reach, which is called the state of enlightenment or Brahman. And what is that and who is that? Bhagwan is slowly introducing his nature to us. So verse number 6. Etad yoni nibhutani. Sarvani tyupadharaya. Aham Krishnasya jagataha. Prabhavah pralayastatha. Etad yoni nibhutani. Sarvani tyupadharaya. Aham Krishnasya jagataha. Prabhavah pralayastatha. So etad. So these two that we have talked about, the lower and the higher nature, the matter and spirit, para and apara, etad, these two are yonini. These are the wombs of all beings, bhutani, all beings. As I said, everything is, all that are living has to have matter and spirit. The matter which is inert and spirit which is enlivening. Sarvani, all beings, iti upadharaya. Understand this very, very clearly, that we are all made of these two, matter and spirit. But he says, but then higher than that is I. I hear Bhagwan Sri Krishna, when he says I, he not only means the flute player of Vrindavan, but the total consciousness, Brahman, the total, that's why we worship Lord Krishna as the manifestation of that supreme reality. That's why they say we have yet all the 16 kalas, Shodasha kala, all the 16 kalas of the supreme were present in the Lord Sri Krishna. So he says, I am the Krishnasya Jagata of this total world. I am Prabhava Pralaya. Prabhava means the birth, Pralaya means the death. And he does not include, but it is understood as sustenance. So it is in me that this world is created, it is sustained, and it ultimately perishes. So he says, I am the source of all of this. So the wombs, so what he, when he says wombs, that means that this whole universe is created out of these two, the matter and the spirit, the para and the apara. It is, as Gurudev says in his commentary, like electricity. You know, electricity by itself cannot do anything. Electricity may be running through the wires, but it's only when the electrician connects a bulb to it and you turn the power off, then the room gets lit. So electricity itself cannot light, but electricity needs a bulb. Same way a heater or an air conditioner or a fan. The fan cannot move. It needs electricity. But electricity there would not be enough. It has to have the fan connected and turned on. So what we have to identify or understand, which is our true nature. We have the lower nature, the BMI, and we have the higher nature, Om. That's why this Gurudev's chart is all complete. The entire Vedanta can be taught through it. Because all moving and stationary, char and achara, everything is consisted of these two. And I have to understand that what is my higher nature. I should not only think that I am this BMI, but I am this Om, this consciousness. And constantly remind ourselves. That's why in meditation, that is what we do. We chant the mantras which tell me that Chidananda Rupaha Shivoham Shivoham, you know, the Nirvan Shatkam, Manobuddhahankar Chittani Naham Nacha Shrotra Jivve Nacha Pran Netri. So, Gran Netri. So, I am not the body, mind, and intellect, but I am that supreme consciousness. When we remember that, then that is the only way to get rid of sorrows. Otherwise, sorrow will keep on bothering you. But if you say, I am that consciousness, and to my body, mind, and intellect, there may be problems, but they do not affect me. So that is called, which one are we identifying it? Which one are we connecting with? Are we all the time just engaged in our body, or are we thinking higher? Now, science does not believe in this. What science says that these five elements came together, and when they came together, life was created. See, they don't say that there is matter and spirit. They say there is only matter. And when this matter, like in how was the protozoa created? Well, there were all these molecules and they somehow met together. And when they met, they became a protozoa. They became the amoeba, the first one. And then the amoeba slowly, slowly grew, and then it became many cells put together, and then it became a fish. And then from the fish, it decided to walk on the ground. So they say that matter alone is important. They don't believe in spirit, in consciousness, in life. But the Lord says that, which it says in the Kaivalya Upanishad very beautifully, that in me, this whole universe appears, because it is in that one consciousness. That's why there is the beautiful verse, Mayeva sakalam jatam, mai sarvam pratishthitam, mai sarvam layam yati, tad brahma dvayam asmiham. So the enlightened student who has reached that state of enlightenment and has become one with that Lord, the Brahman, after going through the teachings of the Kaivalya Upanishad, he then tells his teacher that in me, this whole universe is born, is sustained, and it dies. So when he says me, he does not mean me, the body of the student, but me, that Atman, the consciousness, because he has woken up. And that's why he can say that, you and I, because we are so identified with this body, we cannot say in me is this entire universe. Because when I say me, I think of myself as this body. But when I understand I am that consciousness, and in deep meditation, when you go to that silence and experience that oneness, you experience that the vastness of our inner personality. And why should we know this? Because when we see an effect, we need to know the cause. So for example, I hear a baby crying next door. So it says, why is the baby crying? You know, there's noise. So the baby is crying. So why is the baby crying? Because he had the candy and his older brother came and took it away. So effect was the baby crying, but the cause was candy. You know, so we have to find out. And then you tell the brother, you know, no, give it back, because I'll give you another one. That's not right. So you teach them rightly. Or when you see flooding outside, then you say, why is there flooding? They say, because there was heavy rain for last 4 or 5 days. Like we are seeing in the eastern United States, there's so much floods and so many people are dying. Now, why is there heavy rain? Because of global warming, you know. And why is there global warming? Because, you know, we are not taking care of the environment. So you have to go to the cause and not just look at the effect. For a second or third grader, it's okay. You tell him, it's, you know, why is it flooded? Rain. That's all. He doesn't need to know global warming. But as we grow up in our thinking, we need to go to the cause. So similarly, as we evolve spiritually, we see the world that is inert. And then we say there is something enlivening. But then what is that which is enlivening that Purusha and Prakriti? What is that, the total consciousness, which is the Brahman? So you have to go to the ultimate cause. And then beyond that, there is no cause. See, cause hunting ultimately stops. Like they say, you say the world was created by God. Yes. Now, who created God? You know, children always ask, there has to be somebody created. No. Ultimately, we have to go to an uncaused cause. That Brahman, the consciousness, which was always there, always will be there, and from whom this temporary world appeared. And what is God? They say the God is the material cause of this universe and the efficient cause. So to give an example, now there is gold, right? And out of gold, we make gold ornaments. We make a bangle or we make a necklace. So what is the cause of the necklace? Gold, right? Gold is the material cause from which the necklace was made. But there has to be an efficient cause. There has to be a goldsmith. Gold by itself won't become a necklace. The gold has to be melted, and then this goldsmith has to know how to shape it and how to position it and how to put all those little, you know, stones in it and diamonds and all. So the material cause is gold and the efficient cause is goldsmith. And because of that, this beautiful necklace came out. But in the case of the universe, God himself is the material cause and he himself is the efficient cause. So it is said God himself became this whole universe. That's why Tad Srishtam Anvishat, Upanishad says, having created this universe, he then entered. Anvishat means he entered. So entered, we think of entered as, okay, I was outside and then I entered the room for the class, and when the class ends, I will leave the room. No, when they talk about Bhagwan entered the universe, what it means is he pervaded the universe. He became the whole universe and then himself. So the lower Prakriti and higher Prakriti are both him. Him or her or that consciousness alone created this universe and then entered. Just as in my dream, I create the dream, but then I myself enter in it, right? In my dream, I find I'm walking and there is a tiger chasing me and then I'm climbing the tree. So I enter the dream. So enter me, do I physically enter? No, I pervade the entire dream. Entire dream is my mind. The tiger is my mind. The forest is my mind. I am also there. That is my mind. And the mountains and the rivers and everything is me. So similarly, that one consciousness created the whole universe and then pervaded it. And that is separate from these two. So there is my lower nature, Bhagavan says. There is my higher nature. And then I am separate from those. So these two are required for creation, but I, the consciousness, none of these two are affecting me. They are just my creation, and that is like the play and in which this whole universe. That's why the 15th chapter almost ends towards the end. He says, Uttama Purushastvanyaha Paramat Itya Udharitaha Yo Lokatrayam Avishya Vibhartyavyaya Ishvara. So he says this Uttama Purusha, this Paramatma, this Supreme Consciousness, which is the true, the only thing Advaita, the only thing that really exists, in which this whole universe is playing, that is called Paramatma Udharita, the Supreme Lord. And what it does, it enters Lokatrayam Avishya. It enters these three worlds. The three worlds can be heaven, earth and hell, or it can be the waking, dream and deep sleep. So in these three states of that we go through, the waking, dream and deep sleep, the one constant is the consciousness, the alive. Even when I'm deep sleep, it is the consciousness is there. Even when I'm awake. And this Mandukya Upanishad, which we are just doing, Vimalji is doing, it's very, very, for me, I had a very, you know, it's like something woke me up when I've been listening to that. And ever since he is gone, in my car, everywhere, I just play Mandukya commentaries and I've been reading it, where it talks so very clearly about the three states, the waking, dream and deep sleep. And the fourth state he calls is Turiya, or the state of the Chaturtham, which is the state of the Atma, the consciousness. And what it says is that alone is real. And in that state of consciousness, these three states are playing. So just as I am that consciousness, and I am playing three different roles. I am playing the role of waker, I am playing the role of dreamer, I am playing the role of deep sleeper, but I am none of those. I am not the waker. If you take anything from today's class, just say, I am not the waker. I am not this waker. That's it. Simple. And when I am not the waker, then you are negating the waker's body, the waker's mind, the waker's intellect, the waker's spouse, the waker's children, the waker's car, the waker's house. Nothing is, you are negating all of that. They are all there. But I am not those. And none of these have any reality. And only one reality is that, and this will point will come again and again. So it's something which is kind of shocking that, oh, you mean my spouse is not real, my children, my house, they're all there, but they have a relative reality. They are there right now, but tomorrow they won't be there. My body is here right now, tomorrow won't be there, but this Atma, the consciousness, will always be there in the past, present, and future, waking, dream, and deep sleep. And once you identify with that, that is called liberation, that is called moksha, and that is the purpose of this life, to wake up to that truth, that there is only one consciousness, which is my higher nature, Om, and which is, and that's why that Mandukya Upanishad talks a lot about Om, that Om is the A, U, and Ma are the waking, dream, and deep sleep. And then after chanting Om, the silence is that fourth state, the Turiya state. And that's what they say, Om is Brahman. So Om, that's why chanting of Om is so powerful, because it shows the entire universe, all the three states, and the silence, which is the fourth state. And that's why all our mantras begin with Om, and chanting of Om is, because you are, it is the Lord name himself. And then you say Om Namah Shivaya or Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya or whatever else. But so that is the essence of this verse, three verses, that there is my lower nature and my higher nature, matter and spirit, out of which this whole universe is made. And there is one Lord consciousness who is beyond both. The lower and higher are his powers, but he is beyond that, Purush and Prakriti. In many places, Purush is used as the supreme, like in Purush Suktam, Sahasra Shirsha Purushaha Sahasrak Sahasrapat. There, when they use the word Purusha, they're talking about the supreme consciousness. So that's why the same, Purusha also means man. So we have to know what is the context. But when we talk about Purush and Prakriti together, we are talking about Lord's lower nature and higher nature, but the Lord is beyond both. That's why the Uttam Purush, that's why in 15th chapter he says, he calls it Uttam Purush, the highest. Uttama Purush Anya Paramatma, that is called, it is that. So that is the essence of this verse, that see the world as a combination of matter and spirit, and they are all a manifestation of that supreme. Very, very beautiful, and tells us how the world was created. And next week, there's a very most, one of the most famous shlokas we'll be doing of the Bhagavad Gita, of how he sustains this world and how he is beyond that. And he will tell us more about the specific qualities of what the Lord is, where you can find me. So we'll do that next week. We have about a few minutes. Any questions, any comments?
So at the time of death, how is the agency removed?
So we have in our, the five pranas, you know, prana, apana, samana, vyana, and udana. So udana is the fifth one. The prana is the intake, apana is the excretion, samana is digestion, and you know, vyana is circulation. So the four, udana is the one that becomes active at the time of death. Also, it works in sneezing, like where you have to forcefully expel. Or so udana becomes powerful at the time of death, and with great force it pushes the subtle body, the mind and intellect, out of the gross body. That's why they say his pranas have gone. So that's why sometimes people at the time of death also lose control of their bowels and urine and all, because there's so much force is required to throw the mind and intellect out of the gross body. And so this is the pranas, this is the subtle body, along with the vasanas, propelled by the vasanas and by the karmas. Then this subtle body leaves the gross body at the time of death and then goes to different worlds, heaven or hell, based on, you know, all my karmas and my actions and my vasanas, based on my desires. And then when it is time for me to take a new body, this mind and intellect, this subtle body, enters the womb, and it could be a pig's womb, it could be a human womb, or it could be a cow's womb, and I enter that womb again based on my karmas and my vasanas, based on my desires. Unfulfilled desires, if I have some strong unfulfilled desires, then they will be fulfilled in my next birth. So that is, so at the time of death, it is the subtle body which leaves, propelled by the udana, and then it re-enters. So that is what happens at death.
Anilji, when Vimalji was here, he had used one word, samskara.
Samskara means my samskriti. Samskara is my culture. Samskara is what culture I have. You know, that's why they say you should give a child good samskaras. Is give them good values, good ideas, and tell them about their culture. So samskriti or samskara. That's why the word Sanskrit, you know, that means that which is well made. That's why this language is called Sanskrit, means made very well. And there's no better language than Sanskrit. It's a perfect language. So samskara, samskriti is all your good values, I think. Culture, you know, by nature, yes, all that.
Related to swabhava and vasanas?
Yes, swabhava is also the same. Swabhava, samskriti, samskara. But samskara more, it's what values you give to your children and what values we grew up with. That is called, that's why they say, na, iske samskar acche hai, means he comes from a good family with a good background. So, yeah, but they are connected loosely, yes. And then vasanas are what determines, you know, what is your samskara. Whether you have good or bad vasanas. Yes. Is the concepts clear? Lower, higher, nature, and I tried my best. Conditioned, unconditioned consciousness. That takes a little thinking. And these ideas, that's why I said Bhagwan has shifted the channel. Now he says, now start thinking. Now don't only passively take it, but whatever we have discussed, go home, think about it, read the, you know, the commentary, and so that way. Also, there is a very nice book called Drig Drishya Vivek, the difference between the seer and the seen. And that tells us, in that book, it is very well explained what is the unconditioned consciousness, conditioned consciousness, and then how it functions. There also book is there in the office if you're interested. That one and Tattva Bodh. Tattva Bodh is the fundamentals, fundamental concepts. They're all explained. If you go to the office, you'll find some good material that will expand on it better.
I think individual conditioning comes from individual vasana. It's if you remove the vasana, you have unconditional consciousness. As long as we have our desires, likes and dislikes, and all that, we are conditioned by our vasanas.
Right.
Conditions the consciousness, not us. Also conditions the consciousness.
Right, right.
And that's how we function through our vasana.
Exactly. Right. Yeah. So the idea is to grow beyond that. Because we are conditioned by our desires, our tendencies, yes. And that's why we function the way we do. So the idea is to, from negative vasanas, to grow positive vasanas, and ultimately go beyond the vasanas to that which is beyond that. Don't only get stuck on just becoming. Some people say, I do good things, I don't hurt anybody, so why do I need to come to Gita class? That is good, you're a good person, don't hurt anybody. But who is that you, and why did you come, and what is the purpose of so life? That only the Gita or the Upanishads, the scriptures tell us. It's good, you know, be a good person, hurt nobody, that's wonderful. But you have to go beyond that. From karma, go to knowledge. You're doing good karmas, that is good, but knowledge is what will take you to the highest goal. And nahi jnanena sadrisham pavitram iha vidyate. Bhagavan says there is no greater purifier than knowledge. You have to have knowledge. Puja is good, karma is good, service is good. Nothing wrong with that. You know, doing yoga is good, all that. But what is it that is making me do, and why am I here, and who sent me here? That only knowledge will tell us. And that is, that's, otherwise you're staying on the same floor, ground floor, doing karma, bhakti, puja, all that is good. If you want to go to the second floor, You have to have knowledge.
Okay, vasana is like a prison.
Yes.
You have to get out of it because it makes you do things.
Thank you. Yeah, you have a question.
The actual slokas of the Bhagavad Gita, how many years old are the actual slokas? And then there's been many conversions.
Right. They dated to about 3500 BC. So about more than 5,000 years, Bhagavad Gita was. And the Upanishads are even older than that, yes. Though some of the Western scholars say it is, you know, few hundred years before Christ, but I don't think so. I was reading somewhere, they say Mandukya Upanishad is 1st and 2nd century AD. You know, these Western scholars always try to diminish, but these all Upanishads were composed between 5 to 7,000 years ago. And the Bhagavad Gita came afterwards.
So if it's that old, over the years, the translations, have they been refined?
No, the verses are the same. The verses have been, the Sanskrit verses are the same. Different people have written commentaries on it, like Shankaracharya ji has written on Advaita, and then other commentators have written, you know, on Dvaita, using the same shlokas to take out different meanings. But the verses are original. Same thing the Upanishads. They are very ancient, but they have been passed on from student to teacher. So they are in their original form, yes. That's how they were given by the Bhagavan Sri Krishna to Arjuna. And then Ved Vyas ji took those verses and put them in the Mahabharata, the scripture Mahabharata, where the, you know, when the war between the Kauravas and Pandavas was going on. It's very ancient knowledge. We'll continue. Lord will tell us about himself. Om Sarve Bhavantu Sukhinah, Sarve Santu Niramayah, Sarve Bhadrani Pashyantu, Ma Kashchit Dukha Bhag Bhavet. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Hari Om Shri Gurubhyo Namah. Hari Om.